You're due for your biannual cleaning, something you usually forget and would rather not remember. But you just got a reminder from the Gentle Dentist in Worthington. Call 614-431-3311.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
This is Hidden Killers Week in Review.
A look back at the most prolific stories of the week.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi.
All right, buckle up. We're going back to Delphi. The case that couldn't really get any messier. It just keeps going. What if I told you that a convicted suspect's defense team is now basically saying, hey, the prosecution might be playing a game of evidence hide and seek. Except it's not a game. It's a murder trial. Richard Allen, the man convicted for the brutal 2017 killings of Abby Williams and Libby German, is now at the center of these allegations. That key evidence was withheld from the defense. Letters that point to other potential suspects buried. Interviews with the early persons of interest gone. And prosecutors, well, let's just say they're not exactly jumping up to explain themselves. Joining us today, someone who knows exactly how the legal system is supposed to work. And more importantly, what it looks like when it doesn't. Bob Mata, defense attorney, host of Defense Diaries, here to help us unravel the legal circus. We've been talking on this one for a long time. If these allegations about the prosecution withholding exculpatory evidence are true, how do we get there? Because right now, the defense of Richard Allen is still going, hey, look at this, look at this, look at this. And they're just throwing it all against the wall that is the judge, Gull, and it's just bouncing right back. There's a lot here, and a new motion response has been filed recently. Let's break all that down and how we got to where we're at right now.
Yeah, so you had the initial motion, which was filed, which was a motion to produce and preserve. Mm-hmm. And it was relating to these letters from this inmate, Lacey Davis, wherein, you know, he declaimed to Baldwin after the trial, Andrew Baldwin being one of Richard Allen's defense attorneys, when he went and visited him recently, that, look, man, I sent like 7 or 8 letters to McClellan. And Baldwin goes back and he looks, he's like, well, I didn't get any of those letters. He's also like, you know, because the first time that he had met him almost a year prior to trial, Baldwin had gone to the jail to talk to him or the prison to talk to him. And he's like, he was not friendly to Baldwin at that point. Mm-hmm. Because what he had been told is that there were 3 people involved. At that point, Allen's obviously arrested. And Davis is of the mindset, well, maybe this is one of the 3 dudes. So he wasn't helpful. He's like, all I could tell you is I did a taped interview. Go watch that. Mm-hmm. You'll get all your answers there. So fast forward, trial happens. Allen's convicted. And, you know, it people are telling Baldwin, you got to go talk to this Reese Davis guy again. Mm-hmm. We're hearing shit. So he does. Davis has completely, you know, changed his entire story in terms of what his thought process is with respect to Richard Allen. He no longer believes that he is the third person. And then we get this response after that's filed, because it's the one thing that Gold did not deny. Mm-hmm. in her like most recent flurry of denials without hearings. And she says, well, that thing is still hanging in the air, which I knew at that point meant she needs something in writing from McClelland addressing why none of this stuff was turned over.
Yeah.
But first addressing, does it exist? So we come to find out it did exist. Now, McClelland says that there were only 3 letters as opposed to the 7 or 8. He does confirm that they were in receipt of them. He did confirm that they had them. But Nick McClelland took it upon himself, Tony, to decide, well, I don't think that that's exculpatory because it doesn't fit our narrative. That's not how this shit works.
It's not his job to do that.
It's not how this shit works, bro. because you're reading through the letters and also communications through some podcast team that was communicating with Kagan Klein And you have Kagan Klein, who is currently incarcerated for a very, very long time due to his massive collection of kiddie porn that he has. So he's doing a very, very long bid. And, you know, you have this period of time early on when Klein was claiming, for whatever reason, that he had some kind of involvement in this thing. You know, whether it was that he drew the girls to the bridge that day using the Anthony Schatz account, whether he had a hand in the actual homicide. It's bizarre. It's like you've heard all kinds of things coming out of this guy's mouth, and you've been trying to figure out, well, why? Why would you be sitting there saying that shit? So then by the time you start seeing the text messages that McClellan references in his response to that motion, he's saying, oh, well, these are all these are letters that are inculpatory because Kagan Klein saying that Richard Allen's full of shit. Well, yeah, no shit. Like they've got a guy that's getting convicted and that takes all the heat off him. I can't think of a more useless, self-serving statement from Kagan Klein than, yeah, of course it was Richard Allen. Of course Richard Allen was the, because it's after that point when after Allen's arrested, that he brings up Richard Allen. Mm-hmm. So it's got zero weight as to whatever Kagan Klein is saying. Like, had Kagan Klein said that back in 2017? I never heard Kagan Klein mention the name Richard Allen back in the day prior to the arrest. Never. Never brought up the name. Never. No. So to me, whatever McClellan's saying, well, it's inculpatory to Richard Allen. No, it's not. It's just showing what a lying piece of shit that Kagan Klein is, and everything that he's saying is completely in self-preservation. That's all it is. So it carries no weight. So you've got the response from McClellan where he admits that he has him. So then you get the reply memo of law from Andy Baldwin. And, you know, he brought the heat. You know, it's like you had McClellan impugning the integrity of Andrew Baldwin and his response, and Baldwin came firing back, and rightfully so, because what is clear is that Nick McClellan had his hands on this evidence, which he decided unilaterally that he didn't need to turn over. And the fact of the matter is when the defense can prove that things that are being said by Kagan Klein in relation to Richard Allen are unequivocally false. Mm-hmm. That creates a situation where the letters can be exculpatory. It's not his job to figure out whether or not something is exculpatory or not, because that's impossible for a prosecutor to do that has developed tunnel vision on the person that they have spent millions of dollars in trying to convict. Like they're it just doesn't exist. It's like that is the most difficult thing about Brady. All right. Mm-hmm. Is that, you know, the obligation absolutely is a fundamental thing that exists for the prosecutors, that they must turn it over as much as they don't want to. And you know that they don't want to.
Yeah.
Any prosecutor that is ever going to be spoken to, that is going to sit there and say, I got no problem that turning anything over that might be exculpatory to the person that we're trying to convict and spending a fuck ton of money on trying to do so is full of shit.
Yeah.
They're just not being honest. It's like, you can't, like, I don't even know how they say that with a straight face. Mm-hmm. So Baldwin just fires at him very, very hard. And you see exactly what you saw in the Karen Reed motion to dismiss, where Baldwin takes the time to put together all of the shenanigans and tomfoolery and misdeeds of the prosecution during the pendency of this case. All of the things are put together in one place so that you're looking at it and you're like, wow, how can you trust anything the government is doing in this particular case? It is the biggest case of hide the ball that I've seen in maybe ever. And it's like,
I mean, it's constantly hide the ball. And then it's like, we're not hiding the ball. Well, here's, you just did it there. We didn't do that. It's like, yes, you did.
you admitted you were hiding the ball.
Like, well, I didn't say, yes, you did. You just said that. You're right, I did. But I'm not hiding the ball. Yes, it's maddening That's why this case is so maddening. I mean, they're saying, okay, McClelland's saying, okay, this is not nothing to see here. It's not exculpatory. Again, not his choice to do it. It's in the same way that at the very beginning of this, they were saying, oh, yeah, those video interviews with all these potential suspects or people who may know what the hell's going on here, we recorded over that on our DVR, but don't worry about it. There was nothing in any of that anyhow.
Didn't tell the defense that they did it for a year. Like, hey, by the way, in the three most important days of any investigation ever, we lost all the interviews of all the people that we liked initially.
Yeah.
So sorry.
Yeah.
But they don't tell them right away. It's like, so.
And it's supposed to be just okay.
Dude, right. Like Baldwin spends a lot of time talking about other prosecutors, that what normal prosecutors do, if they have a mess up like that, mm-hmm. of that magnitude, they immediately tell the defense, they're like, man, like, you're not going to be happy. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, we're going to have to deal with this in court, but I'm just fucking telling you right up front, we lost all that shit. We overrode all of this evidence, but they tell them right away. So when McClelland doesn't do that, and then they bury all the third party suspect shit in these 2 terabytes of documents, you know, a piece here, a piece there, a piece here. And they've got to go through needle in the haystack style and find this shit, like a single page or a 2-page mm-hmm. report, and kind of put it together. It's not until they get called out on the shit that they start admitting the shit.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, and it's just been on repeat. It's like Nick McClelland writing a letter back about the Purdue professor that unequivocally is not poo-pooing the concept that the sticks that were left on the girls were ruinic in nature. He mm-hmm. says, I certainly can't not consider that as a possibility.
Sure.
You know, and McClelland put it out in a loud testimony on the stand in one of the hearings to where literally a cop is on the stand lying about what this professor says. So then when they try to figure out who the professor is, McClelland's in writing saying, oh yeah, we can't figure out who that guy is from Purdue, which probably has maybe 2 professors that cover that kind of like area of archaeology or whatever. It's not archaeology.
Paganistic religions.
So, you know, but it's going to be a very small pool that you're trying to figure out who you spoke to from over at Purdue. Yeah. And, you know, but then he doubles down. He's like, we don't know who it is and we may never know. And then it comes out during the deposition, like a week or two later, or whenever the dep takes place. And, you know, it's like all of a sudden they figure out who it is. Oh, yeah, we figured out who it was. It's like they're lying. And why are they lying? Why? If you have a powerful case against Richard Allen, if you are so secure about the evidence that you have about this man and that he did this, you know, did these crimes, then why the fuck are you doing the bullshit that you're doing, not just on one occasion, but repeatedly, over and over and over again? If this case doesn't make people feel like I can't trust that verdict, then I don't know what to tell you, because that is not how the system is built to operate. It is not how it's supposed to work. If they have the evidence, go try the case, do it on the up and up, prove your case with the evidence that you have, get your conviction, and then no one's bitching. If anybody is under the impression that people that have their eyes on this case, which is legion, if they're just going to go away and fade into the background, they need to think again. Because nobody's going anywhere on this thing.
No.
Everybody that is obsessed with this case and is demanding that there be a retrial, I mean, they're not
just a
going.
Fair trial, just a fair retrial. Bring the, just let the case be presented as it is. And that was not what occurred in round one. And that's the biggest issue with this whole damn thing.
Really is.
The fact that McClelland didn't come back saying, shit, I didn't realize we had this. He came back saying, yeah, we have it. And it was my call. I said, you don't need to see that.
Right.
Where does this go now? I mean, where is the defense of Richard Allen going to take this? Has Gull made a response to that yet? Or where are we at with all of that and his response that's now been given?
Gull has not made a response yet. She has not put an order out with respect to what she's going to do with it. At the very least, if Judge Gull has any interest in being viewed as a serious judge, which I know that she very much expects people to view her as, mm-hmm. at the very least, she has to conduct a hearing on this.
Yeah.
Like another denial without hearing is just going to cause this already massive snowball to turn into a straight up avalanche where people are like, that's what I'm saying. No one is going away on this. Mm-hmm. The finger pointing is never going to stop on this case. No one is ever going to feel comfortable with this conviction. And the longer it goes, the less people that were once on the side of, yeah, they got the right guy. Thank God that they got the right guy are not going to be feeling like that anyway. Because again, when you have a situation wherein it appears that the government is hiding the ball, not just on Richard Allen and everybody that is following this case, but on society at large,
yeah.
We have to hold our government accountable. And make no mistake, I say it over and over again, law enforcement is the government. Prosecutors in every office in every county in this country are the government. Judges are government employees. They are elected or appointed. They are all government employees. We have to hold their feet to the fire. We have to have transparency. We have to have accountability. And, you know, I mean, if she doesn't do it, Tony, and she's like denied without hearing, then all we can hope for at that point is that it's of record. It's going to be looked at by the appellate courts, and the appellate courts are hopefully going to be as outraged as the rest of the people that really follow this case closely are. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, and like undoing a conviction, you know, I mean, dude, it's like moving a mountain.
Yeah.
Like by yourself without heavy equipment.
Mm-hmm.
It is a near impossible task.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't have that person to point the finger at in terms of an appellate court, they are going to be of the mindset. Like that is why Baldwin spent so much time, like over and over and over leading up the trial, filing Frank's hearing or Frank's motion after Frank's motion and continually citing the same shit,
mm-hmm.
because he knows that if Allen's convicted, that's all of record and he is putting it in the record ad nauseum so that, you know, who's going to see it? The appellate court. Mm-hmm. And the appellate court's going to be like, yeah, you know what? I don't know if these other culprits that they're talking about did it or not, but it certainly should have been brought up at trial, because I also think it's weird that one of the guys was posting on Facebook a mimic crime scene of exactly what it looked like at the actual crime scene.
It's a little weird when someone's doing that.
It's a little weird. It's a little strange. You know, so, I mean, man, it's a mess. I mean, but the hope is that she grants a hearing. I like, you need to see McClellan in there answering to this.
Yes. It's just, it's not even guilt or innocence. It's just, this needs to be fair. And this was not fair at all.
It was not fair.
We always end up at the bigger picture on this. And I don't know that I'm any closer in my mind to understanding what the hell is going on deeper here and why everybody seems to have this. And everybody, meaning Gull and the prosecution and McClellan and all that. Why are they so hell bent on not being wrong? Is this all ego? Is this all, we spent all this time on this, we spent all this energy and we just have blinders on so much? Or are we, is there some higher power here that really at the end of the day, we don't even know exactly who or what it is that is somehow going to be exposed by going down one of these roads and digging down one of these roads of other, one of these other suspects or possible suspects or alleged suspects? Is that going to turn up some shit on somebody that really shouldn't have information coming out about, or they don't want that information to come out about? It's one or the other. And I don't know if it's all ego or if this is protecting something.
It, I mean, it, it, it sure seems like it, doesn't it?
It does. And it could go either way.
Like, how do you think anything else? You know, and look, like I was knee deep into this thing in terms of my coverage.
Yeah.
So, you know, I had people coming out of the woodwork, like in my DMs and in my emails. Just,
yeah, I mean,
like, and dude, like I've heard it all. I've heard every potential concept of everything that you're talking about and more. You know, there is a web in that tiny community wherein, when you just start looking at kind of factually who was involved with things, I mean, like, do you just completely ignore the fact that Nick McClelland, who is now the prosecutor, that his brother was once arrested in the not too distant past for distributing methamphetamines? I mean, do we not like I remember it was a big deal when, which president was it? It was Billy Carter pissed on the White House lawn. Like, I mean,
yeah.
Your family and who they are is kind of a big deal when you're in a public office. Like that. Yeah. The point being is, like, how much are we supposed to overlook before we start thinking, is there, and I'm not suggesting anything about Nick McClelland personally.
No, I'm not either.
But in terms of when you just start kind of looking at everything involved in all of the ways that things went down in this case, you have to think that there's something else at play. Like there is somebody or something that is being protected, that's being swept under the rug, that they have a convenient scapegoat. I mean, it's like a fucking movie plot.
It is.
I mean, it really feels like that. And you know what? And maybe it's not.
Like, yeah.
The only way that we get to that, where any of us feel like it's not, is by having a fucking fair trial, man.
Yeah.
And we're not there where it seems like it's a million miles from there. Because as long as Gull is sitting on this case, and I don't think anybody has Gull under their thumb. I think that Judge Gull, when she saw the confessions at that point as the person who's only supposed to be the gatekeeper and not the trier of fact, in her mind became the trier of fact that Richard Allen did this. Like, and I think that guided her through every fucking thing that she did throughout the course of the entire 2 years or year and a half that it took for this thing to get to trial.
And what a
only explanation I can come up with.
What a horrible judge to look. I mean, come on. This is someone who's seen case after case after case, you know, should by de facto be somewhat experienced on evaluating how people's mental health plays into their actions, just by experience. Don't have to be a psychologist to look at this and go, if you torture someone for a long period of time, they may say anything you want them to say. He could confess that he was O.J. Simpson and that he killed Nicole Brown. And, he killed Nicole, too. He confessed it in prison. He'd confess to anything at that moment in time just to stop being tortured. How on earth Judge Gull does not see that and at least take that into account, have some understanding of this, that this was not a legitimate confession, and just to double, triple, quadruple down on it, it's insane. Are you that stupid that you don't see this? I get maybe a layman out there who doesn't know anything about this stuff. He's just like, yeah, well, he confessed, he's done. I don't get it from a judge. Like, the judge should be smart enough. They should not be on the level of Joe, who's down at the bar and is watching the game and doesn't pay attention to much shit and doesn't have any sort of real interactions with psychological issues in his life. So he's not super educated on this. I get someone going, well, he confessed. I don't get the judge. Just does not compute. It's not an excuse.
It's not, man. And it's like you have the confession side of it, and then you have her presented with the evidence that their timeline has been destroyed. Their entire 19-minute timeline from whatever 2:19 to 2:32, wherein it really played a huge part in terms of the conviction, because it does relate back to the Monica Walla alleged confession that she wrote into the system, wherein he talks about the van spooking him, and that's when he kills the girls. And the state is absolutely beholden to that time frame, because that's how they got him convicted, by saying when the phone stopped moving, that's when the girls were dead. That's 2:32.
Mm-hmm.
And when the defense presents evidence that Brad Weber didn't drive that van back down that private drive until 2:52. I'm sorry. The state's entire case has just been flushed down the toilet because everything that they said was false. And again, we have just like in like we have another Napui situation where McClellan had to have known that. He knew or should have known that Brad Weber was not telling the truth. They had that fucking evidence. They had that video with the van that you can see in the background driving down that private drive, and they had the timestamp for it. And they know it's not 2 a.m. in the morning. It would be fucking dark, bro. Like there any kind of timestamp argument they're making is complete and total bullshit. Dude, to your point, she knows that. Yeah. She read it and she doesn't give a shit. Like, and it's unbelievable to me. An honest jurist has to be sitting up there like, God, Jesus, I don't want to have to do this, but I have to do it. It's my job.
It's your job. It is what it is. It's not it's either this is such self-preservation of so many egos here, which could be exactly just what this is. And if it ever does get completely flushed out, that's what we're going to see. Some very petty, shitty human beings who are just so ingrained in whatever they've said and they can't be wrong. That could be the case. Or we're going to find out that somebody's covering for somebody. And maybe at the end of the day, most of these people don't even know who they're covering for. But it's just, here's what the direction we have to go. What that overpower is, or this overlord that's pushing them in that direction, I don't know. But it's so, so creepy. Let me ask you one more thing on this before we wrap up this discussion. Did you see the Dateline, the new one on this case the other day?
I did.
What was your reaction to how that the whole thing was presented and McClellan in his interviews?
I wasn't impressed. I mean, look, Dateline does what they do.
Yeah.
I mean, Dateline is very formulaic. They, you know, they wait for those convictions. They want the conviction. It was very state oriented. Yes, they had the defense on there a little bit. They put a little bit about the defense in there. Just in terms of McClellan. It was one of the strangest interviews I've ever seen. And like,
it's almost like joyful in it. It was weird.
It was so weird. And it was like, but the things that he says just don't echo back confidence in the person that he convicted.
No.
Like, there's just so much kind of like, hey, you know what? Like I know there were like it wasn't a perfect case. It's a tough case, you know, and but we got the conviction. You know, like there's just like this isn't a prosecutor that is selling you on the concept that they absolutely have the right person and they'll die on that hill. And it's like it was the same thing before the Dateline came out, where like all the cops are going out and doing their victory tour, but it's really a PR tour to try to tamp down what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
They're trying to get out there and say, hey, all the Tony Bruschis and Bob Mottas of the world that are calling bullshit on this trial, well, don't listen to those guys because we're cops and we never lie and we got the right guy and they're full of shit.
Yeah.
And they use social media to make people think things that they shouldn't think. Well, fucking bullshit. People have their own minds. We're just putting information out there and people can come to their own decisions.
We're not making shit up.
They think. Exactly. We're not making shit up. So, yeah, dude, I mean, it's what I typically expect from Dateline.
Yeah,
I mean,
completely.
Allie and I did a Dateline and of course, you know, our client was convicted. So they made us look like total assholes. So, you know, it's like, I had negotiated. That was our Dateline was the first ever 2-hour Dateline.
Oh, really? Yeah.
So now they're commonplace.
Yeah.
But that was the first one. And then I gave them war room access, which they just turned around to make us to really cast us in a shitty light. But you know what? It is what it is.
It is. I mean, I get it. I mean, they serve their purpose and it's Dateline. I respect their work to an extent, but it's entertainment and true without Dateline too. A lot of people wouldn't even know about these cases. So
100%.
It certainly serves its purpose.
They have their role in terms of storytelling, they make compelling stuff.
Yeah,
I mean, like Dateline is not a deep diving organization.
No, but it is fun when you have a case that you're looking into and you have a friend at Dateline and they go, you want me to make a call just to like scare them and say, hey, Dateline's looking at this. I've done that a few times.
Yeah.
And it's like,
It definitely helps.
It definitely makes people go, oh shit. People are starting to look at us. One more, and this is the biggest question. How many bottles of hair gel do you think McClelland goes through in a week?
A lot, man. Like, I think he's probably hitting Diddy up in the joint and being like, yo, you got any of that that baby oil that you use?
I need to put more in.
I've used up all the hair jelly in my county here. Yeah, he puts a lot in. The word on the street is that he had plugs.
Oh, really? I wouldn't be surprised.
I've seen and these don't look like AI photos. They look like he had plugs. Then he's created, like, if you look at older pictures of McClelland, it doesn't even look like the same dude.
No, I've done that. Cause I'm like, looks very different now. Like, what's going on? Yeah. It's like, he bought up all like the LA Gear hair gel at like Big Lots one day. And now it's like, he's at a lifetime supply, just like Diddy. Hopefully he doesn't have drugs in his hair gel. All right, that's that.
Craving nonstop true crime updates? Press subscribe now and get the latest cases, analysis, and expert commentary delivered straight to your feed. Only from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today. Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again. You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today. Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again. Sally from Finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.